from KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston, and welcome back to Guns Over Texas, brought to you by the Voice of Texas, AM 700, KSEV, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, your 2012 Concealed Handgun License Headquarters. As usual, it's Jeff, Jason, and Gary in the studio today. So holster your guns and pick up your phones. Call in now at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Let's talk guns, and let's talk all things that go bang. As usual, Gary is on our Guns Over Texas radio social media network. So if you can't get us on the phones, you can always get us on Facebook or on gunsovertexas.com. So, gentlemen, using that term loosely with you two fellas.
Oh, yeah, very loose.
What's new in your gun world this week?
Unfortunately, I don't get to buy new guns or fondle new guns all that often. So my only new thing was I'm fresh off the range. I just left the impact zone. Worked a little bit with my M&P shield. Actually found that it was a little bit off at 25 yards.
Usually, when we hear that the gun is off, yeah, or that the sights are off,
it's the nut behind the grip.
I would totally agree with you, but every other gun I shot out there today, I did not have a problem hitting anything at 25 yards. It's off just enough to be off by about 4 inches at 25 yards.
Which direction, left or right?
Left.
Shoot mine consistently to the left as well. Not far, inches.
It didn't change when I changed hands.
Yeah.
So it's if it had been, it's one of those things where we always say, yeah, it's probably the Indian. Had it just been an issue of me, using too much finger or something like that, when I switched to shooting it left-handed, I would have expected to suddenly start shooting right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what happened. It's just slightly left. But, I mean, at 4 inches at 25 yards, yeah,
out of a subcompact gun, it's not a 25-yard gun.
It can be,
but yeah, it's not what I would expect to go shooting targets.
No,
at 25
I would
yards
not.
With.
I would not volunteer to try to do a 25-yard shot with a shield. I did it. I can do it. It just isn't optimal.
Now, did you get tempted to go out to the 100-yard side?
Well, I did not do that with the shield, but we did do – that's become kind of a thing that if that range is available, just kind of a confidence booster and to reset everybody and say, okay, look, are you doing it right? Go over there and don't skip around in, because apparently you can do that the way Phil's got the place set up now. But, can you get a solid hit at 100 yards with a pistol?
Now, for those that don't know, the impact zone is one of our favorite places to go shoot outdoors. Has multiple different berms for your training. You can go out there and take care of just about anything you want to do for training or competition, you name it. And then on the back side of the range, you've got the rifle area, which is they have steel targets set up, and you can shoot at 100 yards, 200 yards, and 300 yards. And something that Phil likes to do, Phil Oxley, the owner, great guy. He likes to take people out there and show them his 100-yard pistol skills by holding the gun upside down and shooting with his pinky finger and hitting steel at 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not good for your ego.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but when you own your own range, you get a little bit more time to go out there and practice.
Well, I'm not shooting upside down.
But no matter which way you hold the gun, the rounds are still going the same way, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's something that I never expected when I first started shooting 100 yards with the pistol, is that I thought I would have to offset the sights a little bit.
Yeah.
It's all the exact same thing.
Yeah,
still
I mean,
at 100
it's
yards.
Your holdover may be a little high, depending on how short your barrel is or something like that, or what the muzzle velocity you've got out of that round, out of that particular gun. But, it's generally, hold your front sight right on right about at the guy's head, because it's a man-sized target.
And it'll drop him right in the chest.
And, yeah, I mean, now if you hold it at the chest, you may skip one in. It may actually hit the ground first. But, that even having a round skip in may give someone pause.
Yeah, and at 100 yards, you can tell the slightest jerk of the trigger, because it's not going to hit the intended target.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, it's either an ego booster Or it's a ego deflator.
Yeah.
One
and,
of the two.
And, but that's the cool thing is that it's one of those things that you can't mail at home. It is not terribly difficult, but it is something that requires that you proper sight alignment, proper trigger control, grip and stance make a difference in how easy it is. And breathing and all that stuff comes into play. And yeah, you either make the shot or you don't.
Now, Houston, did you get any shooting in this week? Give us a call and tell us about it. 281-558-5738. Jason, mm-hmm. What's new with you, man?
I didn't get a lot of shooting last week, but I did spend a lot of time on the internet talking to several friends I have from outside the state who want to buy guns now that there's an upcoming election. I've probably sold more AR-15s for other people in the past 2 or 3 months than life.
No. Well, thanks a lot, Jason. We appreciate it because they haven't been leaving my range.
they've been coming to your range, though.
That's right.
But, yeah, and another guy, I've got a friend that's in Virginia that was all hot and bothered about getting a gun and what can he do, and it's like, you're in Virginia. I don't know. Let me, I found him some internet stuff, but I don't really know what the local laws were in Virginia as far as the possession, sale, transfer, and all
don't
that other
go to
stuff.
D.C.
Well, he does know that part, but it's like, well, aren't you moving back to Texas? And he's like, yeah, in like 8 months. I'm like, whoa, but there's all that, got to do it now. So, he was all into getting something before the election. I'm like, well, that's great. But he had actually been asking me about an SBR, a short-barreled rifle. And
he's not getting that done before the election.
Well, I knew that part, and I kind of explained it to him. And then it's like, you can set up a trust. You have to fill out the paperwork. You have to do this, that, and the other. But it's like your trust might be set up specific for the state of Virginia. When you come back to Texas, is it all going to be the same legally? I can't answer those questions. So I pretty much told him, you know what, suck it up and get an extra 6 inches of barrel and get a full-size 16-inch barrel gun and just be happy with it. Save a little bit of money until you get back to a definite free state down here in Texas.
Good for him. What are you pushing the most? I'm going to go out on a limb and guess Colt.
You would probably be correct. No, I mean, Colt, SIG, Daniel Defense, BCM, I mean, just whatever you find that's what you like. Obviously, if you want like a mid-length or you want something that doesn't have a gas block already on it, you want something that has the tube effect down the front, Colt probably wouldn't be your first choice. But if you just want a standard M4-style gun, Colt's the standard by which most are judged.
Now, if he wants to go the SBR route, but he doesn't want to wait until after the elections, SIG has a new platform out. It's called the ACP, Adaptive Combat Platform, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And you actually put a pistol inside of it, and it utilizes a sling. You push against the sling. Mm-hmm. It's got a red dot on it and everything. It's a really cool little platform. Maybe we can talk about it a little bit later.
Oh, it doesn't have the stock on that one.
Doesn't have the stock.
Okay, I was about to say, you'd still have to short barrel rifle like pistol.
You use the sling as a stock, so it's basically a single point sling.
And for fun, I've seen those with the stock actually attached to them, and I think it would be a fun, you read the little reviews on them, it's like, man, 100 yards hitting steel all day long with it as a shoulder-fired pistol, but it's like, the money for a toy.
Exactly, exactly.
Apparently these people have no children and no bills and no car payments and no mortgages and stuff like that.
Now, the second hour of the show, we're going to have some friends joining us. We've got a current-day Green Beret who is going to be putting on a rifle 1 and 2 course coming up in the next, I believe it's December 1st, at the Impact Zone, one of our favorite places to shoot outdoors. Mm-hmm. And he's putting that on through our friends at Spectre Firearms. And so one of the owners, Mona, is going to be here to talk, answer any questions that anybody's got about SBRs, suppressors, anything Class 3. Because so much of the population doesn't understand that all this stuff is legal to do. And so our friends at Spectre Firearms can take care of that for them. So we'll have a Green Beret to talk to, and we'll have Mona to answer any questions that you may have, Houston. So you can, if you've got any questions, give us a call, 281-558-5738, or you can get us on Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook and .com. Let's go right out to Cypress and talk to Andrew. Andrew, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Andrew?
How you guys doing today? I've got a question. What's a range that you'd recommend to that you can do cowboy action style shooting at?
Tomball Gun Club. Yes, sir. Now, I know that there's if I'm not mistaken, there's a pretty long wait to get in it. But if you go talk to them, I'm sure they'll at least let you come out and check it out and maybe get involved in it somehow.
Okay. Do they have, like, a website?
I'm sure they do. It's just not something I've got right off.
Hold on,
top of my
Google
head.
Foo is working. I watch Master Montgomery over here going at it.
I know when he asked
I'm
if there's
going
a...
after, but I don't have a range. There's a Tomball gun range, but not a gun club. Oh no. Yeah, in Magnolia,
But you should have seen Gary's eyes light up when he asked if there was a website for it. Yeah.
So. But they're listed out of Magnolia is where the company is incorporated, but I don't have a website just yet. If I do find one, I'll be sure to get it to you.
I'll tell you what, we'll post it up on our Guns Over Texas yeah. Radio on Facebook, because we've got one of their guys that comes in and shoots on a very regular basis at Shiloh, and I talk to him about it all the time. It sounds like a blast. Mm-hmm. You know, they get all dressed out in the period outfits and everything, and they've got places that they go shoot that have the actual, you know, ghost town set up.
Yeah, there's another club that shoots, I believe they're shooting in Columbus or Eagle Lake.
Columbus sounds real familiar to me.
Yeah, because I know that a bunch of the guys in the HGCA are out of that club. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a website for them offhand. I'm looking for one. So as soon as I get one, I'll post it to our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
All right, Andrew, yeah, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. And, man, you'll definitely have a good time if you get involved with something like that.
Yeah, I've never done the cowboy shooting before, but I actually went online and Googled. I was looking to build a cart for my three-gun stuff that I go and mm-hmm. do. And you'll see when you go to these matches, people take old golf caddy carts to carry a golf bag, or they take jogging strollers for infants, wagons, whatever, and they make these little elaborate carts to carry around their ice chest, their ammo, their three guns, lawn chairs. I mean, you usually got a whole lot of stuff around at one of these matches. But while Googling carts for three-gun, I saw the carts that some people had made for cowboy action. And wow, some people have some time and money on their hands. That one guy built an actual stagecoach that looked to be about maybe 6 foot long and about 3 or 4 foot high, and it was built on a golf cart style chassis, but it actually had wagon wheels. And he would sit up in the thing. There was no horses in front of it, but he would ride this stagecoach around.
These people are really involved in what they do.
Oh, yeah. It looked like they're having a blast.
It looks like a ton of fun. It's something I've been invited to go do a couple of times, but I just haven't had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I know some of the shoots are on Sundays, and that kind of coincides with what we do here.
I can't imagine having to cock the hammer of the gun after each shot. After all these years of automatics. A
little more effort than you want to put into it.
Well, you know, if you've ever watched Bob Mundin run a wheel gun, apparently it could be very, very quick.
Well, it's not like I don't have my butt handed to me at a three-gun match, and I'm a pretty reasonable shot with modern firearms, but I know if I went to the cowboy route, I would not only have it handed to me, it would be stomped on and spit out the other end.
I tell you what, we obviously have some cowboy action shooters listening to the show, because we've got Russell, and Seeley has some information on cowboy action shooting. So, Russell, fire away. Russell.
You broke it again. Oh, hey.
There we go, Russell.
Push the button, guys.
I pushed the button. You got to get on the ball, Russell.
No,
welcome
it's
to Guns Over Texas.
The guys in Columbus are called Stagecoach.
Gotcha.
There's also another group in Eagle Lake called the Texas Pistoleros.
All
awesome.
Right. Now, are you familiar with the Tomball Gun Club at all?
No, I'm not, because I live out in Sealy. I have gone out and shot at Stagecoach and the Texas Pistoleros, and it is a blast.
Now, Russell, tell me this: if somebody's wanting to get involved in something like this, what would you say they would have to put into it monetarily to get started?
A lot of the guys, from what I saw, use Winchester lever action, and Rugers.
Yep.
Ruger Vaqueros, or whatever their single action. We went out there with a Dan Wesson, because it's a single action, but it's a late model revolver.
Uh-huh.
And we went out there and shot. When we went out there, it was about a year ago. It wasn't cost anything for you to go out there and pick up a gun and shoot. But they've now done it where it charges you if you're not a non-member. It's a fee, okay. You know, to pick up a gun and shoot. But it's a blast. You shoot from a stagecoach. They actually have a stagecoach out there that you shoot. It's similar to IDPA, but you're like shooting from a saloon window at a target and stuff like that. It's a blast. Mm-hmm. But monetarily, how much you willing to spend?
Now,
like with any hobby,
like racing, yeah,
absolutely.
Yep.
Now, is it necessary? Is it in the rules that you have to have the appropriate dress, the appropriate attire?
No. I went out there with jeans and a t-shirt. You know.
Okay. Now, was everybody else in jeans and a t-shirt, or were they in their cowboy gear?
No. They were full. There is actually a gentleman. His nickname is Paladin. His holster was made by the same gentleman that made the Paladin holster, and he lives up to the name. He can shoot just as good as the guy from Have Gun, Will Travel. I can't remember the gentleman's name.
Richard Boone.
Yes, thank you, Richard. See, Benn.
I had to go sub-reference old school there.
Yeah.
Because you're the oldest guy in the studio.
Am I the oldest one here?
Yes.
Holy God.
The guy for the Pistoleros, one of the gentlemen's name is Paladin, and he shoots just as good.
Now, do you know if they have websites for these clubs?
Well, there is. Texas Pistoleros does have a website, and I think Texas Paladin is listed as their contact. And they've got a link off of the Single Action Shooter Society website. So
I live in Eagle Lake, and I drive past the place all the time. I never see anybody there.
Yeah,
usually when they're there, they have the flags up, and I never see it. Yeah. I'm usually in town on the weekend.
Yeah, their website, the Eagle Lake Club is TejasPistoleros.org.
That's correct.
So it's TEAJAS, Tejas, Pistoleros.org, O-R-G. So I'll post a link to those guys. I'm still looking for links to the other clubs.
But I know the one in Columbus, they do a big, I want to say it's Stagecoach or something like that. It's a big blowout. It's huge. It's almost, from what I understand, it is either the national championship for single action or the state. I'm not sure. I don't have access to a internet because, well, I'm driving.
Well, and we wouldn't want you to be looking that up all the time.
And it does look like a lot of fun. I just have – there's so much money and time and stuff I have tied up and all the tactical stuff that to say, all right, you're going to start over from scratch with new calibers, new guns, new techniques, new leather, new shooting gear. It's like, I might be in three-gun for a while.
If you want to race your Corvette, how much are you going to spend on that?
A lot.
Got to have the Corvette first.
Since I got a four-cylinder Camry, I'm not going to be racing.
Track race, Camry. You won't win, but you can do it.
Russell, we appreciate you giving us a call and giving us the info on that cowboy
you're
action
shoot.
Thanks a lot for listening to Guns Over Texas. If you're on hold, hold on just a minute longer as we're going to come right back from this commercial break and get right back to the phone lines with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We appreciate you listening, and we're talking about training on the commercial break. One of our commercials came on talking about get your training from an instructor that knows what they're doing. In the second hour, we're going to have a current day Green Beret on, and he's going to be talking about a training course that he's going to give out at the Impact Zone. So tune in right around 6 o'clock. We're going to have him on. Now, let's head right out to the phone lines and talk to Kip in Meadows Place. Kip. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas. What do you say today, Kip?
Hey, how y'all doing? Had a nice time with the wife out at the range today in lane 10 and 11.
As usual, we're going to put your plaques out there.
question for Gary.
Yes, sir.
Since you are an instructor, I was doing a little something different today and found a problem not with the range nor the pistol, but the shooter.
I'll be
the first to admit it. The first to admit it.
And that's not admitted very often. It's usually one of the others. It's the gun's fault, the magazine's fault, the sight's fault, or the range.
Yeah, well, I've been shooting long enough to know you can't do that. Mm. Well, I had two 6-inch round targets hanging off of each clip.
Okay.
To bounce back and forth.
Okay.
Cadence was probably every half to three-quarter second.
Okay.
And started right, left. The right side groups were like about 2 inches. The left were 4 inches, almost twice as wide as the right. What on earth could cause something like that?
We could throw a lot of different things at it, but if the group was simply larger, it sounds like you weren't taking nearly as much time to take that shot, is what it sounds like just off the top of my head.
Because I was just, I kept a cadence going, boom, boom, boom.
That may be like that. The time that it took you, let me ask you this. Which target did you start out shooting first, right or left?
Right.
Okay. Which could point to you were rushing that second shot to hurry up and get back to the right. Another question I would have for you is whether or not that shot was to the right of the left target, or you know, to the right of center, or to the left of center?
Most of it was a little to the on the left target, and most of them were to the right of center.
Okay, which
where
suggests
right
me
target
that you
was,
well, and so that suggests me that on that transition to that target, you weren't, and this is something that, that even I struggle with in IDPA, is that your eyes were not ahead of the gun. So you were tracking with the gun, and as soon as you saw a black underneath your front sight, you pressed the trigger.
Thank you, sir. I'm looking at it now, and you're right. I'm following the sights. I wasn't bringing the gun to my sight. That was it. Thank you.
Yep.
That answered that question.
Yes, sir.
Got it, Kip. We're glad we could help you out, man. Thanks for giving us a call, and thank you for your patronage at Shiloh, as usual.
All right.
apparently, we should probably have more talk about cowboy action shooting on this show because we've got a lot of callers wanting to talk about cowboy action shooting. So let's head out to Manville and talk to Don. Don, welcome to Guns Over Texas. You have some info for us?
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
Great, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, that club out there in Manville is called, Columbus is Texas Historical Shooting Society.
Correct. I actually just posted a link to them a second ago on our Facebook page.
And most of the time, if you go out there, guys will let you use your stuff. I mean, if I was there, I would let you use mine just to give it a shot because it is a blast.
Everybody that I've met that's into the cowboy action shooting seems like a really, really great bunch of people.
Well, you know, the shooting community in general, it's, you know, my mom used to give me a lot of stuff about when I started shooting competitively because I came from football having discovered it was dangerous. And, you know, the thing is that, yeah, there were a couple times I went some places and people kind of looked at me kind of funny, but the reality is that it's generally a very polite society.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of people starting fights at gun ranges.
That's right. Now,
you know,
now Don, when you do the cowboy action shooting, do you dress up in the period outfit or do you just go
yes,
as you are?
Yes. Well, I haven't done it in several years, but I did. And it's not very expensive to get into. You can do it on the cheap. I mean, a pair of jeans, a pair of cowboy boots, and gun leather.
Well, that would be the easy part. It's all the lever action and single action guns I don't have.
And the ammo.
And the ammo. Oh, the ammo, yeah.
Hey, I had a couple of Vaqueros. I even picked up a couple of Jaeger Italian pistols. I used Rossi lever actions. And a lot of this stuff. I'm doing it for the enjoyment more than I am to be named number one.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
trust me, I know that's never going to happen for me either.
So, my late wife, she got into it with me and my son and everything. So we kind of had a family affair.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a blast.
You like
it
that little Rossi lever action that you were using?
I beg your pardon?
How'd that Rossi work out for you, the lever action?
I didn't have a bit of problems with it. I have two of them.
What calibers?
And I never had a problem.
What caliber were you running in them?
38 357.
See, that's cool. I was telling Jeff a few weeks ago that I was looking at one of those because I have a inordinate amount of 357 ammo sitting around the house, and I've got a couple little 38 J frames and stuff. I didn't have anything to run the 357 out of, and I thought a little Rossi carbine, a little 16-inch lever gun would just be a perfect thing to run all that 357 out of.
Well, I have a couple of the older ones, and I've got 20-inch round barrels on it.
Mm-hmm.
One of them I slicked up pretty good. The other one I really never did anything with. But I can crank out some pretty good accurate shots pretty quick with the one. And see, nowadays there's guys that's spending money getting them short stroked and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I kind of faded out of it, because the camaraderie and the thing about the old guns, it would just started changing. You know, so
when it becomes an arms race, people aren't worried about improving their skill set. They're worried about, if I spend more money than you, I get to win. And that alone kind of, you know, that's what happened with IDPA and a couple of other disciplines out there, that it should be about learning the skill set, not about spending more money than everybody else.
Right. Jason, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Last week, I think it was, a gentleman was talking about he had a wreck and had to be hauled off in an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived close enough to where his family came and picked up his is firearm.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in a situation where there's nobody that that can happen, what happens to your concealed handgun?
It would depend on the agency, the officer involved, and a lot of other factors. If it's the if the guy, the EMT who's taking all your stuff, normally if they're cutting off clothing and doing all that other stuff, they're going to bag all your property. That property would be dropped in a bag there in the ambulance as they're going along, and the officer, family member, whoever can take possession of it. With a firearm, I don't know what each individual ambulance driver's policy is or each individual hospital's policy is, but it is a piece of property that can be bagged up. Thing is, it has to be secured.
And actually, some agent, I know that for a long time, Houston EMS would not touch it.
And they might have an officer come out there and pick it up. In which case, if they did take it, I would assume that the worst that would happen is they'd take it, you'd get a receipt for it, and you'd have to go down and pick it up from the property room when you get up.
Exactly.
But it wouldn't be a fine. I mean, you're legally carrying it. It's just not something that they can say, oh, well, we'll leave this on the shelf until you get better. They can't just leave that, you know, in your room with you.
Well, I figured there would be a big issue of it going to the hospital anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not – you didn't take it to the hospital knowingly trying to commit a crime. If you were knocked unconscious because your car rolled and you had a gun on you, I mean, it's not – there has to be intent in most violations of law, and there's no intent there. You could find a prosecutor or a cop that was just so anti-gun and venomous against you that they could try to make something out of it, but I would – I think it would be very difficult to find a jury that would want to convict on that.
Yeah. Well, I carry an M&P shield, so I was a little worried about that it might disappear on me through all the transition.
Yeah, well, when you're unconscious, I'm sure you're more worried about not bleeding out or dying of a brain hemorrhage. But, yeah, I mean, I would assume once the officer took it, you know, if I were the one taking it, it would just be, you know, we unload it, we drop it in a bag, we seal up the bag, and the bag goes in the property room until someone comes and picks it up, you know.
Okay. It just kind of started me, you know, that's something to think about, at least have some kind of plan.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, most cases it wouldn't be a question anybody had asked, well, what happened to your gun? You know, and I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, just
I
hope
know who I go to, you know.
I'd be worried about it, man.
I just hope that shield doesn't get transitioned out of that property bag and have a Jennings or a Jimenez arms drop back in its place.
I do know of a Houston PD officer that's looking for one, so well, I don't know how desperate he is.
There's a few officers looking for him because some people like Jeff, you know, will promise they're going to hook you up and come up with one for
and
you.
And they never deliver.
They never do come through.
Hey, and nobody else has been able to deliver either, so I don't feel bad about that right now.
It's all right. I just want it out there every week that this is, what, week number 12 or 15 that I've had to go without one when everybody else had one. But
I got lucky. I had a student help me out. So.
And he's complaining about it when I told him I would sell it to him at cost.
Wow.
I think the price is going to go up. Which is why I haven't run out and bought one somewhere else.
Yeah. I love mine. And I finally got my CompTac holster for it.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was Gary that was suggesting that, or it might have been Jeff.
Yeah,
that's right. But, which rig did you get?
I got the cheap one.
Hey, if it works, it works, man.
Actually, it's the CVTA or something like that.
CTAC.
And it's like I hardly know it's there.
Yeah, it's a great holster, great gun. You're all set up. Now get the right belt to carry that with, and you're even better.
Yep.
And actually, I know CompTac was doing a clearance sale last week, and they had a bunch of their belts on
belts
clearance.
And T-shirts and holsters and all kinds of things on sale.
Unfortunately, I didn't see a belt that was in my size, but, yeah, check that out.
So, well, you have a successful lifestyle body, and apparently most shooters don't. If I could run away or fight better, I wouldn't need my gun.
So, Don, thank you for calling. We appreciate you giving us a call and contributing to Guns Over Texas.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
If you have any questions or comments, Houston, you just want to get in on the fun, you can give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Now, currently at Shiloh Shooting Range, we got a shipment of rifles that I was not expecting. They were ordered about a year ago, and something that
so
was
you forgot about them?
Ordered and forgotten about.
So until the bill comes.
That's right, and the bill has come. The bill has come, so we need to sell them now. Mm-hmm. So we've got SIG M400s with the enhanced trigger package.
Oh, cool.
Which, in my opinion, it's the MOE setup, so it's got all the Magpul parts all over it.
I'm a big fan of the Magpul with most stuff.
Yeah, and really sweet, really lightweight gun. And the enhanced trigger package has got to be the nicest trigger I've felt on a stock AR ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is beautiful.
And the other thing I'll give SIG props for is they actually milled in the single point sling attachment points mm-hmm. to the back of it. So it's not a standard receiver, so to speak, but they did some nice little enhancements on there.
Yeah. It's it really got more of an European, almost an HK influence on that gun that than mm-hmm. we've seen in the past.
Oh, it's overpriced?
Actually, it's priced to move. The list price on them is right around $1,100. Uh-huh. And for any of our listeners, thing is on sale right now for $949.
That very is cool. A very good deal.
It is. Very, enhanced very trigger package and the entire Magpul setup. And then we've also got the 516, which mm-hmm. the 516 is the gas piston driven AR, mm-hmm. AR style rifle. And it's got the patrol package, so it has the aluminum quad rail on it. Mm-hmm. Really fine looking gun, and for a gas piston gun, it's extremely lightweight. When I picked mm-hmm. it up, I thought it was a direct impingement gun because I'm used to my LWRC and it's some of these other piston guns that are
and the original SIG 5.56, which
is the original 5.56. Oh, it's like
5.50 even. Yeah,
yeah. The original 5.56 is like putting a cinder block on a sling and throwing that around your neck. But this thing mm-hmm. is really it's a fine rifle. Mm-hmm. List price on those is right around $1,700, and for our listeners, we will sell it to them for $1,399. So really, really nice rifle. If you're in the market for a rifle, take advantage of it now. Shiloh Shooting Range is open for another 20 minutes, but I myself will be there all day Tuesday to take care of you. Give me a call. If you can't come in, we can actually put a deposit on it over the phone, and I'll hold it for you until you can get there. The number at Shiloh Shooting Range is 281-444-8930. That's 281-444-8930. Now, let's head right back out to the phone lines. We got Dave and Katie. Dave, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Dave?
Well, love your show. Just looking for a little tip.
Yes, sir.
I've recently purchased a Ruger Red Hawk 44 mag, 7.5-inch barrel, and took it. Obviously, it was a used gun. Took it to the shooting range just to try to sight it in.
Okay.
And I owned one years ago, and I enjoyed shooting it just. You know, I don't hunt with it or anything. I just take it to the range and have a good time with it. But I'm noticing that when I go to fire the gun, I can literally, in anticipation of the kick, I can literally see myself dip the barrel.
Yeah, it's a flinch monster. Yes.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, I've shot a .357 for so long. I used to have that problem. I don't have that problem with it anymore. But now I'm. What, do you just have to shoot a whole bunch of bullets out of it to get rid of that? Or
you know,
what?
The thing is that you're human, and humans are not used to explosions going off at the end of our hands. So that's you're going to it's a conditioned response to go, okay,
well, I've even tried to, you know, I mean, I know you're supposed to be surprised when it goes off. I've tried to
actually. Let me say this about that, and we tell people that when we're starting out as shooters and we're trying to get them to get past the flinch issue. But the reality is that a very high level shooter does know exactly when that gun is going off. So I don't want to tell you that that's a bad thing, but. It definitely sounds like anticipation. You're right. I mean, you call
no doubt about it.
So, you know, the first thing that we would normally tell you to do is spend a lot of time dry firing that gun and getting used to the feel of that gun, you know, without that recoil impulse.
It doesn't hurt it to dry fire it.
Shouldn't. If it's a gun of any decent quality, that should not bother it a bit. If it is a concern. Then the safe bet is to just get some snap caps, mm-hmm. And there are 44 caliber snap caps available through any decent retailer in town. You may have to order them if it's a smaller shop, but you can certainly get those and fill your cylinder up with those. That way, you're cushioning your firing pin.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely dry fire practice, you know, so that you're not having that impulse and just get used to the concept of running that gun.
A lot of the old time guns. If you're talking actual true single action guns like old cowboy guns, they had fixed firing pins that were actually a piece of the hammer. It was a one piece.
And the older Smith and Wesson revolvers.
Yeah. And so there was truth that in the old, you know, if something made in the 1940s or whatever could have an issue with dry firing and could have an issue with snapping off the firing pin. But modern revolvers using transfer bars and all that other stuff.
Yeah, well, this one has a transfer bar.
Yeah, so it shouldn't be a problem with dry firing.
Okay.
Yep.
So just. Mm-hmm. just keep pulling the trigger. Yeah,
and like you said,
and do it dry so you're not.
And a set of snap caps will be $10.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, and the snap caps will say, you know, we were talking about modern revolvers. Smith & Wesson's up until, I think, the late 90s ran a nose piece on their hammers. They didn't have a separate firing pin.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, that was a concern with those revolvers, but again,
but you could drive. They were held in place with a pin.
Exactly.
So you could drive out that drift pin and put a new firing pin. It wasn't a one piece where it broke off, you just had to replace the whole thing.
Exactly.
So.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
All right, Dave, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you giving us a call here at Guns Over Texas.
You bet.
All right, now let's head out to Meyerland and talk to Mitch. Mitch, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say today, Mitch?
Doing well. I wanted to share with you, I recently had an 18-wheeler trying to parallel park into my back door and fender on my little car running about 65 miles an hour on the loop, and ended up calling the police and so forth, and when they came out, I was kind of concerned. I didn't want to, I carry my driver's license under my carry license in my in my little car box.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me for my driver's license, and I pulled it out. And this guy had the demeanor of Matt Dillon. You know, I mean, he was very efficient, but he was very matter-of-fact, kind of a not one of these anxious ones. You know, he's an older guy, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks over, he's got my driver's license, he looks over and sees the carry license still in the wallet. Mm-hmm. He said, "Are you carrying now?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Why don't you go put it in the car?" Which I thought was really cool. I mean, the guy was straight up, so I went over and put it in the trunk and locked it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Because, again, he would know that you have a gun, but if two or three other officers came out of the wrecker driver and you're bending around in your trunk trying to get your stuff out of your car before it gets towed and your shirt blows up, you never know. I mean, it's just better for everybody just get out of the way till we're done with our stuff. Not that they're trying to impede your rights or saying you did anything wrong. It's just saying, you know, there could be an issue since we're going to have all these other guys running around with guns. Let's just defuse the issue before it even happens, and then you can go on about your way.
That's what I thought. I thought that he probably just wanted to be the only gun on the street that day. I mean, really. And that was cool, but he handled it really well. And I just, you know, every now and then you hear a lot of bad stuff about those boys, but you know, and girls. But, you know, when they do something right, you got to mention that too. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, for every story that you hear of them doing something wrong, there's about a billion stories of them doing something right that we'll never hear about that doesn't make the news because it's not sensational.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just watching the Alaskan Mounted Police, or whatever they call themselves, troopers, you know, and they were arresting somebody, and this gal was just going completely berserk as they tried to put her in the cage. I mean, completely going, banging her head against everything. And I said, now, you know, those are the type of people that end up filing complaints about abuse. Mm-hmm. Because they were having to hold her down. I mean, really, I mean, she was going crazy, you know.
And she'll go before a judge and say, "I never did any of that." So as much as we complain about the video camera, and trust me, a lot of us complain about the video camera, it saves you as much as it cooks you.
Right.
So.
Well, I think that video camera's probably been on the side of the law enforcement more than it has helped the bad guy, you know. Which, it's a good deal. Anyway, I want to also share with you, I have a friend of mine that has an elephant rifle. And he hasn't shot it much. It's 400 and something. It's a huge thing, you know. I mean, a huge projectile.
For all the large game-type animals we have in Texas, I understand.
I don't know. This guy's one of those guys that was carrying a 44 mag before it was cool. But, you know, the thing, I fired a gun with him, and I pulled the trigger, and nothing happened. And I felt this gentle pressure on my shoulder. He said, "Don't move." And he said, "Just hold it there for a little bit."
And eventually.
And he went, notified the range officer, because all you need is a slow burn on that primer, and you go to jack it, and it lets the little thing go right back through your head. You know?
Yep.
But that was a real thrill.
Did it go off?
No, it actually didn't. We put pads on it, you know, put the weights on it, and I finally it disengaged, and we sat there for about 45 minutes before we tried to, that's what the range officer instructed.
Hey, might as well err on the side of caution. I'd say at least 5 minutes, but if you waited 5 minutes that and gone off, it probably isn't, but better safe than sorry, especially with a round that big.
Oh, yeah, it was, I mean, the thing looked like a damn rocket ship.
Did he tell you the cost per round on that thing?
I think it's about $5. $5. That was, you know, a few months back. So, But you don't want one of those things not going bang when you pull the trigger. You know, that's
new.
Anyway, especially if you've got an elephant charging you.
Oh, yeah, just think about that. I told him, I said, man, you got to keep your ammo a little bit more current. anyway, God bless you guys. Enjoy listening to you.
Thank you, Mitch. We appreciate you giving us a call. Thank you for calling Guns Over Texas.
I'll tell you what, you buy your 20-round box of elephant ammo, and I imagine that you don't do too many range trips where you want to shoot more than 3 or 4 rounds of it before you go, yeah, I think I've had enough. That 20-round box might last you several years.
It might last a few years. Yeah, I can definitely see that happening.
Especially at $5 a shot.
Gary, have you ever shot anything like that?
I did shoot a 4-bore once, and I will never, ever, ever, ever do it again.
If all 300 pounds of Gary didn't like to shoot it,
I don't know that
I'll ever do it.
Well, the thing was, I've done that, and then a friend of mine had a 700 Nitro Express, and the thing was that you couldn't find factory ammo for this thing, so it was this weird concoction of rounds, you know, like a 50 cal primer, and then different kinds of powder, different stages, and so that if you've ever seen a flintlock and that slow ignition process. That's very much what it was like, and it's just weird. So, no, I don't have an interest in doing it ever again.
Jason, have you ever shot anything like that?
No. I mean, the biggest thing I think I've shot power-wise is probably, I mean, it's sad to say, like a 30-06.
You've never done a BMG?
I've never done a – no. I've shot the M60. You know, I've done the Happy Switch in 308 and some other stuff, but I've never shot a 50 cal. And actually, when your dad – I was helping your dad one time with some of his when he was still going through his academy class, mm-hmm. with some folks that wanted to come out and do some work on their shooting. And one of the guys in his class had his nickel-plated Taurus service gun. But I said he was having issues with it. And I said, well, do you have anything else? You know, because you know, you don't want to have these issues in an academy class or on duty or whatever. You might need to look at getting something else. Well, I got another gun. Well, what else do you have? And he goes over to his range bag and pulls out a Smith & Wesson 500. And it's like you spent $1,000 on this gun, but your duty gun you spent $300 on.
Right. Misplaced money there on that one.
Yeah.
Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking guns, gear, ammo, anything you want to talk about, give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. And let's talk all things that go bang. I was reading a story. I've read it in a couple different news sources recently, but I'll just give it to you from gunsandammo.com. A Georgia gun range that's currently under construction is coming under heavy scrutiny from its new neighbors.
This is the ones that are doing the...
After being approved to sell booze on site.
Yes. Ooh, yeah. Well, no. Let's make it thorough, because it's not that you get to just go get drunk and then shoot.
The city council approved a liquor license for the Governor's Club. This is a $3.5 million facility by a 4-1 decision. This decision allows the club to serve alcohol in a lounge, which the owners say will be gun-free.
Yes.
Now,
Their shooting for the rest of the day should probably be
yeah. Once you have
curtailed,
once you have a receipt or have been charged. In fact, they flag your car.
That's right.
Driver's license.
Okay.
As soon as you've gone through their shooting into their lounge and have purchased an alcoholic beverage, you're done. You can't shoot there.
I could live with that. Right. And you have to go put all your stuff in the car before you come in. But you can go shoot a few rounds of skeet and trap and then go in with your boys and have a beer after.
A gun valet system with lockers will be available. And customers will be allowed to leave the club with their guns. Now, they also say that customers will have to order a drink with their ID card. Once the card is accepted, it's flagged, and they cannot be checked into the range that day. So Georgia law does allow persons with gun permits to bring their weapon into a restaurant that serves alcohol. They want to take it even a step further. Good idea? Bad idea?
I don't have a problem with it. I really don't.
Now that I hear all the checks and balances, I don't. But I can see the old hold my beer while I take my shot.
No.
That's...
It's easy enough to make that assumption, but that's the thing. I think that the brouhaha that got started over this is the same thing that happened when we passed concealed handgun licensing in Texas and most other states, mm-hmm. which was everyone freaked out and went, oh, God, there's going to be shootouts in the parking lot, and that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think there'd be shootouts in the parking lot. There'd be some guy that was too drunk to remember how to unload his weapon properly and crank a hole through his trunk. or through his foot is what I would think.
Sure, there's been plenty of those.
We don't have to worry about the guy who's drunk when we've got NYPD to do it for us.
Yeah.
Actually, one of our listeners posted posted another story on Facebook about NYPD getting another unarmed citizen the night before last. Mm-hmm. I think something like that, Thursday morning.
What, they shot another one?
Yeah, apparently it was a road rage incident. And
oh, I heard about that. But I thought I thought that was California.
No, this was New York. And
New York, California, they're right next to each other. Yeah, I can see how it's easy to get them mixed up.
The young man who was shot had actually just recently gotten out of the Army.
Oops.
And was trying to become a police officer.
Well, he's not going to make it.
Well, thank you, Captain Obvious.
Wow.
I'm sorry, that's mean.
So
that was a little on the cold. I'm cold and cruel. That was a little on the cold and cruel side.
We'll see what happens. It looks like a case of he said, she said right now. It was an apparent road rage incident. Mm-hmm. And the police said that that when they approached his car, he stuck his hands underneath the seat, and so they fired. And the passengers are, of course, saying
that's
he had his hands
happened.
On the steering wheel and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an unfortunate incident, but it keeps happening in New York. There's also a lot more people in New York than
there's a lot
other
more
places.
People in New York, and again, there's the
more opportunity for something like this.
But look at the operant condition that we put the officers under for so many years. The operant condition of stimulus response: you turn and point something at the officer, you don't comply with commands.
It was an
stupid.
Unmarked van that they were in, and they were in plain clothes as well.
Okay.
Oh wait, it's a plain clothes officer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not good.
But if the officer gave the guy instructions, hey, let me see your hands. Hey, stop. Hey, don't move. Hey, look, you know, put that on the ground. Step away. Whatever it is, once the guy starts doing things that are contrary to what the officer's telling him, his operant condition kicks in and says, okay, he's being noncompliant now, my threat level goes up, and bad things happen.
Yeah.
It's not,
I'm not trying to give the officer a pass.
But.
And if you're in execution of your official duties, I don't think any of us would argue with that. Now, if you're plain clothes and you're not in official capacity.
There's a lot of guys who are plain clothes and that is their official uniform.
I get that. Yeah. But if that's how you're interfacing with the public, then that has some downsides to it.
Yes.
There's a reason that we don't let plain clothes work traffic.
Which is why, I mean, and I work plain clothes. And trust me, whenever we're doing something, one of the first things we say is, hey, before we do this, can we call up a march unit?
Right.
You know, whatever part of town you're in, find somebody that's, you know,
well, yeah, because
a sheriff, a constable, HPD, Bel Air, whoever, get us a march unit around here that we can get something done.
And the story is only going to get better because apparently the third passenger in the car was also an undercover police officer. They were all leaving a club late at night.
Uh-oh.
She was riding with the young man who was shot.
Uh-oh.
And another female who was a bartender at the club.
Uh-oh. Well, it'll be interesting.
Okay,
there'll
be more to come out with that.
Yeah.
Now I'm interested to find out if there were any ties between the shooter and the plainclothes officer in the backseat.
Who following whose girlfriend around that they were jealous of. Yeah, that's okay. So I always try to err on the side
wait to hear more details.
And sometimes I'll always try to, you know, you try to look at the officer objectively and reasonably, because usually I think they always try to throw the officer under the bus.
The officer is the first one thrown under the bus without all the facts.
And even, you know, and then sometimes like they'll go, oh, there's video. And like with the Chad Holly thing, I'm like, oh, well, this guy was probably fighting. And then I watched Chad Holly video and I was like, yeah, a couple of those guys are going to jail. Not all 20 of them that were there, but there's one or two of them that are
going to be in trouble.
Probably going to go away for a little while. You know? And I try to err on the officer's side all the time, but sometimes you watch and it's like, man, I can't help you. I can't. Yeah, I think you just gave your badge away, buddy. You know,
well,
at the minimum, you gave your badge away.
But sometimes there are miracles, and even then, they don't give away.
And that female HPD officer who walked up to the handcuffed suspect and just punched him in the face.
Yeah.
When he wasn't fighting, he was standing there.
He was
literally
already
standing
handcuffed,
there, flanked by two other officers, and she walked up and belted him in the face. And there was a helicopter that was up above filming it. And I was, we saw that on the news, and all the guys that were sitting in our little squad room at the time looked at each other and go, well,
she's done.
I guess there's an opening at the academy for a new student. That one's gone.
I didn't see that. When did that happen?
Was that recent?
Was
a few years ago.
Okay. Year or two?
This is at least a couple years ago, It was. What
there was
led
no
up to
fight.
That?
It was just a foot chase.
It was a foot chase, but prior to that, I mean, the suspect and this officer had, you know, interfaced with each other, and I believe he had struck her before this happened. Now, I'm not at all excusing her. You know, I wouldn't excuse anybody. But, yeah, so, you know, she gets left behind.
Look, the guy is obviously a turd. He gets what he deserves.
No, that's just it.
But as an officer's punched
job
her before.
Is not to mete out the punishment. An officer's job is to bring you before the court.
Yeah. I agree with that, but I don't fault her at all for doing it. She's bringing him to court with
two other officers were already bringing him to court.
In the days before video cameras, it was a different world. But you can't do that sort of stuff now and expect to keep your job. There's no way.
All right, Houston, that's hour number one down. We're going to be back in about 7 minutes with a current Green Beret and with our friends from Spectre Firearms to talk to you not only about training courses that they're putting on, but about NFA guns and suppressors and such as well. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more Guns Over Texas.
From KSEV, the voice of Texas, this is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston, and welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas. We're talking all things that go bang, as usual. So if you have questions, comments, you want to get involved in the show, you can get us at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. And as a few others have already done so far today, you can get us on GunsOverTexasRadio.com and Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook as well. Now, joining us in studio right now is... Well, he's a friend of ours because he's a friend of some of our friends. His name is Larry Ryland. He's a Green Beret, and he's friends with our buddies over at Spectre Firearms, who I thought one of them was going to be joining us today, but apparently they're not. So, Larry, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Hey, thanks for having us in.
Larry, now, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Background, I got several years into the Army. Went through Special Forces training. Got four trips over to Afghanistan. Several trips down South America, Colombia, Ecuador, Dominican Republic, four combat tours to Afghanistan. Taught at the Weapons Committee as a Green Beret, and currently on assignment down here in Texas.
Well, let me just say on behalf of us here at Guns Over Texas and everybody, I'm sure, in the state of Texas, thank you for your service.
All right, well, thank you.
Definitely. I'm all humbled now. Yeah. I've been down to the 4th Ward, patrolled up on West Mount Houston a little bit. Been down in Taco Flats. You know.
Oh, well, thanks for joining us today. And we usually like to talk to our guests a little bit and find out what they like to shoot and what works in their opinion and especially what doesn't work because we get a lot of questions. You know, a lot of the stuff that we're friends with, I'm friends with Sid and Mona from Spectre Firearms because we own a shooting range down the street from Spectre, Shiloh mm-hmm. Shooting Range. And so we see a lot of people that come in, and they come in with the wrong gun. They come in with something that's either substandard of poor quality, or it's something that the guy behind the counter told this little lady that that's exactly what she needed to shoot. And it's usually not something that she needs to be shooting. So, Larry, when you pack your guns away, what do you carry yourself?
Myself, personally, I like Colt weapon systems. I try to stick with a weapon system that's either been... tested or, you know, product tested through law enforcement or military agency. So I stick with Colt or Glock as far as sidearm goes. So
I think
you'll
our
see a
listeners
big smile on my face.
I think our listeners have heard that exact statement before.
I beat Jeff over the head with Colt quite a bit. So
when it comes to handguns, are you a 1911 guy? Or
I got several 1911s. You really can't go wrong with the tried and true system. But as far as reliability and ease of maintenance, I really like the Glock weapon system.
Now,
I've never heard that before.
Now, we're here to talk about your classes and classes that you put on, and we'll get into that in a minute. But when you do these certain classes, when you do these pistol classes and rifle classes for that matter, what guns typically don't run as well as, say, the Glock system and Smith & Wesson and some of these others?
Pretty much any service-grade gun is going to run pretty fine. What you're looking at, guys that show up, the gun is not well-maintained or not properly lubricated, that's where you run into the problems with reliability, or a guy just really hasn't cleaned it in a very long time, that's where you run into problems. Really, any major manufactured gun, I would say service-grade weapon, is going to run and be able to hold up in the class.
Service-grade weapon as in?
I would say service-grade weapon as in, you know, Smith & Wesson M&P, a Glock full-size service pistol, Beretta M9 or 92, or a Colt or Springfield 1911.
Taurus 24/7.
Yeah, I'm about to say, so we're not hearing Taurus, we're not hearing Rossi, we're not hearing LCR or Larson. I didn't hear Bursa, no.
Well, Taurus is making inroads, not that I'm defending them, you know, because, I mean, their CEO did say, yes, we recognize we have a problem.
It's just nice to hear a professional shooter that will come in and say, you know, it's like, yeah, I kind of think we harp on that a little bit on occasion, yeah. So. But, yeah, because the guys will come and say, I've got my Taurus, and it's been utterly flawless. And then they'll go shoot it at Jeff's range. It's like, I don't know why it jammed 6 times in a box of 50. It never does that. Yeah, no, it always does that. You just have selective memory, you know.
Now, tell us a little bit about this class that you're putting on. Keeping in mind that a lot of the listeners, that they're brand new to shooting. We've actually introduced a ton of people into the gun world. I meet new people every day that heard our show and decided that they wanted to come in and learn about what we do. So tell us, can the average person who maybe isn't well-versed in guns come in and take a class from you?
Oh, definitely. What we're looking at, the class is sponsored through Spectre Firearms, looking at a basic carbine course, level 1, and then on level 2 course. Prerequisite for the level 2 is taking the level 1 course. Pretty much anybody, I would say, with or the desire to have firearms training could come to the course. It's not restricted to military and law enforcement. We've had guys, you know, dentists, doctors, lawyers, whoever, even a... you know, former bodyguard and also a guy that just, you know, sold medical equipment on the side. Went through the course and did his thing and did really good. So,
what can they expect? What can somebody learn to, or what can someone expect to learn out of your classes? What's a skill synopsis?
Set. Yeah.
Okay, what you're looking at, we'd start basic with the pistol, get them set up. We'd, along with gear selection, we'll, through Spectre, what we'll have is a gear list and pretty much the different manufacturers you go through. Get the gear list through Spectre, sign up for the course. And then we'll go through placement of accessories and so forth on your carbine, proper placement of your holster on your belt, go through everything with your gear so your gear's worked out so you don't have problems with the gear, and then you can move on to actually what you need to do shooting as far as working on your stance, sight picture, sight alignment, trigger squeeze, get that down, and then we'll advance to the carbine itself. And then we'll get transition drills down from both the carbine and pistol, and then we'll do lateral drills, and then we'll have multiple target engagements, multiple rounds on target.
Where's this class going to be held?
It's going to be out the Impact Zone in Hempstead.
Have you been out to the Impact Zone
yes,
previously?
Yes, I have. We did a course out there back in April.
All right. It's one of our favorite places to shoot. Gary's out there on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. No. Tell us a little bit about the cost of the course.
Looking at it, it's going to be $699 for each course. So level 1 will be $699, level 2 will be $699.
And how about ammo for the course? What's needed?
Basic load of ammo. You're going to need 400 rounds of pistol ammo and 1,000 rounds of carbine ammo or rifle ammo. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sounds like a day of fun.
It's a two-day course, actually. It's going to be Saturday and Sunday for both weekends.
Okay, so is it going to be more pistol on the first day, rifle on the second day kind of deal?
Yeah, we'll start with pistol, and then once we get the fundamentals down, usually once somebody can shoot a pistol good, they can progress to carbine fairly easily. It doesn't really work so well vice versa. Lots of guys can shoot rifles well, but then when you get the pistol in there, smaller size compounds their problems or the things they're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do a lot of classroom time before you actually start and get into the shooting?
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll bring the guys in, take a look at their equipment, see what they're going, go over their guns a little bit, make sure that we're not going to have something that's going to have a catastrophic failure out there on the range, and then we'll bring them in and look at everything, go over a few things, stance, grip, placement of gear, placement of accessories, and then we'll get them out on the range and actually start dry firing before we start shooting.
Do you find that people end up, ejecting gear as they come in with a 20-pound rifle and then start finding out, you know, whatever tactical Gucci they strapped on wasn't necessarily such a good idea? Or
I definitely with the rifle also, along with the gear they're wearing, guys will usually come in dressed like a juggernaut, and then by the end of the day they're slimmed down,
slicker.
Yeah. Definitely.
What's your loadout on your personal rifle?
As far as M4 goes, if it's going to be CQB type situation, EOTech, LA PEC 5, Surefire Light, and the weapon system itself, and then either a Vickers sling or a VTAC sling. One of
there's
the
a whole bunch of people. Yeah, so. Now, you guys tell me that I'm the one who always says a bunch of stuff nobody understood. So,
well, a red dot sight, a white flashlight, and a laser sight.
And a laser designated.
Is basically what he's got. But you don't have mud flaps, cup holders,
no
curb peelers,
no
fuzzy dice,
no spinning rims,
no nothing flashy. Just real sweet, simple, basic carbine. Keep it well lubricated. Make sure I test it and go from there.
Now, your opinion is something I'd like on this because we have some fanboys of piston driven guns around here. your experience, does it matter or is it important? If you had a choice, would you care to have a piston driven AR or a direct impingement, or would you go with totally different platform if you had a choice?
Well, pretty much, M4 has had about 40 years of R&D behind it, so it's pretty much optimum
as is
in its shell. It runs a little bit dirtier than a piston gun, but inherently the piston guns, they have bolt carrier tilt and other problems coming out. Really don't have all the R&D and the money put behind them, like the proven M4 system. So I went back and forth. I tried a couple of piston guns. Really went back to the basics. Basic M4 configuration is what I like.
Yeah. So remember that next time you go sell your LWRC, Jeff.
Keep in mind that just like switching to the M&P, I have gone to a direct impingement rifle as well. Okay? All it took was a couple of classes lugging that cinder block around my neck before I realized.
Don't get me wrong. I still go to a foul, but one, I'm a bigger guy, and that fits more at my just feels right for me, but the gun was designed as a piston gun from the ground up. And my hang-up with piston guns, a lot of the converted ARs, is that that's the thing. They're a conversion. You look at something like even the SIG 5.56, which from the ground up really is a 5.50 converted to take an M16 magazine. And you look at the piston in that compared to the LWRC, it's no comparison. It's some orders of magnitude larger, more beefy. It's a beefier system. And one of them I expect to run for 50,000 rounds, and one of them I don't. It's just my way of looking at it.
Now, Houston, if you have questions, comments, concerns, you want to talk to Larry Ryland here, one of our military hero sitting here in our Guns Over Texas studio, give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Now, Larry, I've got one of my employees at Shiloh Shooting Range is getting ready to go into the National Guard, and he wants to get into Special Forces. And he wanted me to ask you what he can do besides ruck, run, and lift to prepare for his selection.
Biggest thing is want to do it. Lots of guys, think they want to do it, but once they get down the road or start that path, they realize that it takes a little bit longer, takes a little bit more commitment. As far as a guard guy goes, once he starts in the pipeline, he's looking at a lot of time away, friends, family. If he's got a real job in the outside world.
He has no friends, so we're
he even unfriended me.
It's a story for another time.
Yeah.
All right, so going through the selection or going through the process for yourself, would you say that's one of the hardest things you've ever had to do?
Yeah and no. I kind of grew up being pretty active outdoors, running around, doing my thing, hunting, fishing, growing up kind of rough as a kid, so naturally kind of went into the Army, and then I was in the infantry before. So basically I was doing that skill set on a daily basis. We were running and rucking in the infantry. So I kind of progressed to the next level, took it, a step higher, went SF. And it really wasn't all that. I just knew what I wanted to do. Kind of that's where my skill set brought me, and that's how
it
worked
out. So
you
think it's more of a mental game than a physical game?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's lots of guys. We see a guy that's in really good shape, and you think, oh, this guy's going to make it. And that's the guy at the end of the night that turns around and says, hey, I'm done. I'm going home. So –
Yeah. Well, we've tried to help Monty out, with spraying him with pepper spray and belittling him as much as possible and yelling at him like the guy from Full Metal Jacket on a
daily
basis.
He has received quite a bit of abuse, even more than normal, since he decided that this is something he wanted to do.
I think what he needs to do is we need to get him an entrenching tool. We need to send him out into the field back behind Shiloh Shooting and have him dig a hole. And we will go back there and fill that hole with water every day. And he can live in that hole for what? 3-4 weeks straight at a time, and go to the bathroom outside.
We'll
no toilet paper.
Winter.
Yeah, well,
he needs to be cold.
He's got to be wearing the same thing every day. Well, we want mosquito bites though. We wanted to more bugs.
No,
fire
dude,
ants.
Cold, wet, tired, and hungry is plenty.
So, but that way we can give him a little pre-selection process primer. Make sure it's really what he wants.
Oh, I know. We'll put leeches in the water.
No,
I'm sick.
I can't do that. I already sprayed him with pepper spray. I can't. And Jeff tased him.
So then it's left up to me. I haven't abused him.
It was merely a stun gun. You took care of the mental abuse, the emotional abuse. Now, Larry, when is this course that you're going to be putting on?
We're looking at the first and second weekends of December.
All right. And is it an all-day deal?
You're looking about a six-hour day. We'll start about 7 o'clock in the morning. Depending on the class load, on how the students are progressing, we'll work through. So probably about a six-hour day. We'll break for lunch. Both days, lunch will be catered out there as part of the class.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that even if it's raining, wet, nasty, or the weather is inclement, that you're still going to be fighting out there.
We're going to be there. We're going to be shooting no matter
what.
Good
deal. You were expecting everybody to show up with the rifle pre-zeroed, or you're going to take care of that in the class?
No, we'll go ahead and go over zero the rifle. We'll start that off. That'll be the first thing we do before we get started.
Okay.
So appropriate dry weather gear, keep warm, bring your own stuff, and nobody's going to be there to wipe your nose.
Exactly. Definitely.
How often do your students take the carbine one and then come back for part two?
I would say it's about 50% turnout from the class one comes over to class two.
Now, I'm going to put it, do you think that people are humbled after they get out there? Because I've seen it time and time again. I'm an instructor also, and you'll see the guy that went out and spent $1,000, you know, on his gun and $1,000 worth of gear, and he comes out and he can barely cut paper. And they want to, you know, I'm going to pick up all my Blackhawk Gucci stuff and pout and go home. It's like, no, stay out here and practice would be the order of the day. But I don't know. I've seen a lot of people they get their feelings hurt when they go out and they aren't the number one guy in the class.
I try to make the class a little fun, you know, keep it down at a student level. You know, as me, myself, being a former student and then coming through, know how I'd like to be treated. So if a guy's got an issue or a problem, I kind of keep it to the basic Barney level and try to work out his kinks and get him shooting correctly.
All right. Now, let me ask you this, Larry. We make jokes about our zombie gun. And that is the...
I knew it was gonna
you make jokes one, about your yeah. zombie gun.
You're the only one who's hung up on zombies around here.
No, I think it's the stupidest fad ever in history. And all this
and
stuff.
I love The Walking Dead, but the whole zombie show, marketing...
The marketing thing is just... It drives me nuts. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. All these neon green biohazard guns.
Yeah, let's not go down the Zombie Max ammo road again because we've had that call and we don't need to go there.
It is ridiculous. But this gun, let's call it your apocalypse gun, okay? You are running out of your house. You can only take one gun with you. What do you take?
That's
handgun, rifle, anything.
We're talking like make-believe gun. I can grab whatever I want or something I actually own.
We'll go both. We'll do each one.
All right. Something I actually own. I'd say a basic Colt 6920 with a combat load of ammo and a Glock 19.
I think Jason has a man crush on you now.
Yeah.
Now, how about just anything? What would you choose?
Oh, just anything? You got to go mean early, man. Minigun.
Yeah.
Well, see, I went under the basic assumption that we'd be on foot. You know, if we're going to actually have crew-served weapons and a vehicle-mounted platform, I might have picked something different, too.
You can put that on your stagecoach. You know, go to town.
I can strap it to the boy's back and make him haul it around. That's why I had kids, so I wouldn't have to mow my own lawn or carry my own gun.
How's that working out for you?
You pay somebody to mow your lawn.
I'm paying somebody to mow my lawn, but it's not a person that's related to me.
Oh, okay.
Questions, comments, you can give us a call, Houston, 281-558-5738. Larry, let me ask you this. During the last segment, we were talking about a Georgia gun range that's being built right now, and they're taking a lot of flack from neighbors and from, well, just about everybody that's anti-gun, because they got an approval for a liquor license inside their facility. It's about a $3.5 million facility, so it's not like they're going to be catering to people drinking Thunderbird and Boone's Farm. This is actually, you know.
So you're saying farm? I can't join?
Now, they have some processes that you have to go through in order to be able to enjoy a cold adult beverage after shooting. You have to lock your guns away, and once your card gets scanned in the bar, you cannot scan it to go back into the range. Now, I'm personally of the opinion that guns and alcohol, bad idea, but who am I to tell somebody what they can't do? What do you think about this?
I grew up in Southeast Texas, so guns and liquor go hand in hand.
Are we related.
All right. There you have it. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about what to do out in public. Okay, we've had mass shootings recently at the there was the Sikh temple, there was the shooting in Aurora, Colorado. There's been a number of them that there was one in Minnesota recently. What can a person do when they're out in public for their situational awareness, or let's just call it their situational awareness? Let's say you're going out to eat, you go to a restaurant. What can you do to be prepared in case something goes on? How do you position yourself? Where do you sit? Chair or booth? How do we prepare for something like that?
I personally like a booth, and then sit with, so I can face the actual door or another opening. I don't like to have my back towards the door. Just, you know, you have no idea who's coming up behind you in the restaurant or whatnot. So I usually like to see where I get a good overview or field of vision over what I'm looking at.
Which side do you sit on so you know where your gun is? Do you want your gun on the side facing the wall, or do you want your gun on the side facing the exit of the table?
Really doesn't matter. I mean, it's always best to have your gun up against a wall so no one can walk by and grab it, but really doesn't matter. It's going to depend on the situation or the seating in the restaurant.
Now, we're in the day and age, it seems like, and I'm sure your friends at Spectre will tell you this too. It seems like everybody wants to take a little six-round Micro 380, drop it in their pocket, and call it a day. Now, what should everybody carry on them at all times besides firearm?
Cell phone is a big help. I mean, right now you got the current day and age cell phone. You got 911 on tap, speed dial. It's no issue. Always have your car keys on you. You know, you got that panic alarm on most cars now. And I'd say, without a doubt, carry a good knife.
What kind of knife do you carry?
I personally like Benchmade knives.
Jason, what do you carry?
I've got a Kershaw on me right now because my Benchmade broke. Sorry, man. We're having an issue when you call them and say, I tried to tighten a screw with my Benchmade and it snapped in half in the middle. And the guy said, well, it's not a screwdriver. And I go, I know that, but it's a piece of bar stock steel. It shouldn't have snapped in half.
It's a knife.
Yeah, it still should not have broken in half.
It's a knife.
Well, we're going to keep having that argument with customer service because, damn it, they're going to fix my knife.
Now, Gary, what is that folding machete that you've got in your hand?
This is a Benchmade. I've carried Benchmade for a number of years and been really happy with their quality. I was actually going to go to a smaller knife, and then I found this one, which unfortunately they don't make anymore. It was a 610 Ruckus. But it was just the right size for my hand, and feels
but
really...
Albeit, your hand is not the size of a normal hand.
Well, yeah, so little manly knives like yours don't quite work.
Size doesn't matter, right? Right?
Wrong. Oh, well. Don't get me wrong. I firmly believe that the size of the fight in the dog matters. However, mm-hmm. there comes a point in time that being the big dog helps.
Now, do you carry a flashlight with you, Larry?
It depends. Most days I don't. Some days if I'm going to be away from home or I know I'm going to be going to an unknown location, then I'll carry an actual surefire flashlight.
There's been Jason, thanks a lot for doing that. Appreciate that. Hey, Jason just shined me in the face and the eyes with the surefire flashlight.
I'm seeing
strobe lights right now.
Hey, they work.
Gary, you're fired. You're doing the same thing. Do y'all both have surefire lights?
Actually, we it happens we both are carrying surefire today. Mm-hmm. But I've got stream light and works okay. I'm not going to say that you have to have a surefire light, but you know, I have to say that mine have held up.
Mine have held up wonderfully too, but it's not even a tactical thing. I've used the flashlight for daily use, but probably at least once a week. I'll have some issue that I'll go, man, I need my flashlight. Oh, something got dropped behind the sofa. Oh, something underneath the car in the garage. Oh, this. And then even just in work, people say, well, you carry a flashlight. We're on day shift. And it's how many times we had to look in an attic? How many times we had to look under beds? How many times we had to crawl under a house? I mean, it happens. Even in broad daylight, you need a flashlight.
Yeah. Well, our friend Phil borrowed mine today so he could go crawl underneath the classroom at the impact zone to make sure it wasn't a – he thinks he may have a pit that has taken up residence underneath the classroom, pit bull. Mm-hmm. So he went crawling under there looking for it with my flashlight.
Last night, the boy and I went to see a concert. We went and saw a Pink Floyd cover band there at the Bayou Theater downtown. And I'm in a place where they didn't search anybody. We're in a very closed environment with probably about 5,000 other people crammed in. and there's stage lights on, but there's no lights. Had anything happened, if people want to get out of there, there's no light but what you've got and what you brought. And
now, did the security make a public service announcement to everybody that you were a police officer and
oh, this
you were
time
carrying
you
a gun
that?
This time?
No. Oh, yeah. For those who don't remember, when I went and saw Roger Waters a few months ago, I discreetly showed my badge to the lady at the metal detector, and she said, go on around. As I walk around, one of her buddies goes, hey, get back in line. And she goes, it's okay. And I said, sir, I already went, you know, and he goes, no, you can't. And she's telling him, it's okay. And at some point, she whispered down low, she goes, oh, he's a cop. And the guy yells out nice and odd, oh, so you got a gun. And everybody in line stops and stares at me. But that did not happen last night. They just didn't check anybody. So who knows what anybody had in there.
Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with more Guns Over Texas. Guns Over Texas, Houston. We've got a special guest in studio today, Larry Ryland, current Green Beret in the United States Army, putting on a carbine course at the Impact Zone. What are the dates on that course, Larry?
It's going to be the first and second week of December.
All right. If you have any questions, comments, you just want to call and thank him for his service, give us a call at 281-558-5738. Now, I did get a couple of questions on my email. One of them is, what's it like to be an 18 Bravo, a weapons sergeant?
Yeah, it's the best job in the world.
You get paid to shoot at
people. All the cool stuff.
He also wants to know, how easy is it to teach firearms manipulations to foreign militaries? And well, I've seen the video of y'all trying to teach the
jumping jacks,
and that didn't end well. I've never seen anything like that in my life, so go ahead.
It really depends on the language barrier. I mean, if a guy wants to learn, has the ability to learn, you got a good teacher, you're not going to have a problem teaching. You're going to get through even if there's a language barrier. Lots of times you need to demo what you're doing, and that in itself, pretty much anybody can imitate. A monkey can imitate you, so you demo it, and then they usually follow.
So that's the level we're dealing with over there. A chimp can do it, but unfortunately some of our comrades and
some of our allies, yeah.
How is that actually working? Do you actually feel that that you have good people absorbing training, or do you think they're just going through the motions, waiting for you guys to get out of there?
As far as country-wise?
Country-wise, yeah.
I would say the younger generation, pretty much, they accept us. I would say the older generation are pretty set in their ways with their beliefs, their religion, and so on. The younger generation is really more open to Western civilization, videos, movies, and so forth. So they really like us there.
Yeah, well, the older guys have 10 years of Soviet bad taste in their mouth, too. Yeah. I'm sure that doesn't help.
Exactly.
You
know.
You had a thought.
I'm sitting there about to say something that Jeff vapor-locked on us.
Yeah, it was just kind of funny to watch.
Well, I was going to bring up, we had talked during the break about, you know, the cost of the class and stuff, and how if there are people out there who might balk at the cost of the class, you got to think about how much time and money you've invested in your basic weapon system you already have. You probably invested at least $800 to $1,000 in a decent quality carbine before you put a red dot on it. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's going to put a red dot on there is probably at least $400 for a decent quality red dot, $100 for a decent quality white light. So you probably got at least $1,500 in your rifle before you've done anything else. Pistol, a used Glock, $400, new maybe $550. You get some mags and night sights in there, you get about six into it. So you're already talking somebody who probably has like $2,000 just in their basic primary weapon system. Mm-hmm. And before they balk at the cost of a class, if you don't go out and learn how to use it, you've got a poorly designed club or a paperweight.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't know how to run it, it will do you no good. If you bought a piano and put that piano in your house and said, I'm a musician now because I bought a piano, It takes time, it takes effort, it takes discipline, and it takes somebody who knows what they're doing to sit you down the first time. And everybody was a beginner at one point. There's nothing to be embarrassed of. You've got to go out, get some quality instruction, and understand what your limits are by going out and being put under stress, being put under the clock, trying to perform with somebody standing over your shoulder. You know, when you're standing there doing it on a bench in a square range by yourself, it's a little different than when you've got 10 or 15 people watching you in a class, and you're required to get up, get on the ground, stand up, move, clear the weapon, clear that jam, transition to your pistol, go back to your rifle. You know, it puts a little bit of stress that I think that most people haven't had a chance to experience in their life, and it's a good thing for them to get out and experience it.
And a lot of people, like we were talking about on break, a lot of people that have, you know, $2,000-plus into their rifles don't know how to simply lock the bolt to the rear.
Right. Yes, as we discussed during break, there are some that that will say, I shoot this gun all the time. Well, lock the bolt to the rear. How do you do that?
How to do it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, well, how do you normally do it? Well, I have an empty magazine in there. Well, if you don't have an empty mag, what do you do? And I just got blank looks. You need to be intimately familiar with a system that might save your life.
How many times would you guess that you've taken apart and put back together your rifles?
Shoot, there's no telling, probably.
Now, wait, with the M4 having the reputation of being a maintenance whore, we can say, over in the dust, you were in the dust, the dirt, the mud for 4 years in Afghanistan. Did you really see that big of a problem with the weapon running?
Basically, with the M4, the M16 series, like back in the day, Gulf War I, there was a big thing, hey, don't put lube on your weapons, it's going to cake up, blah, blah, blah. Then guys were experiencing jams. Then you got Operation Anaconda, still kind of the same mindset, hey, just a little lube, not too much, is going to cake up. Mm-hmm. You know, now we've learned through TTPs that, hey, the weapon needs to be oiled. You keep it out of the dust when you don't need to, but, you know, you got to maintain the weapon every day, but you properly oil it so the weapon functions and functions dirty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lolly Guns and Happy Gun.
Yes, and I've seen some filthy guns. I think it's Pat Rogers has one, the one with 14,000 rounds through it without being clean, and he just keeps dumping Mobile One motor oil down into it every now and then, and it just keeps trucking and trucking and trucking.
What kind of oil do you use in your guns?
I personally like CLP. I just stick with the basic military issue, CLP. Like I said, I can pull the bolt carrier out, wipe down the bolt face itself, wipe down the gunk in the receiver a little bit, oil it back up, slap it in, and it's good to go.
You realize the amount of internet hate that we're going to get for you saying that CLP or break free
no,
works?
No frog snot, no.
No Slip Militech, 2000, no Militech, no Mobile One.
No KY, no. You know?
But I agree with him. The only reason I use CLP is we get it, you know, I got gallons of it in the arms room that we get, the department buys it for us, so I use it because it's what they give me, and it works just fine.
You know, I went back and forth, tried other things. The biggest thing is, what really works, you know, when you go to a course, some of the military courses or special forces courses, you do shooting, you shoot, 1,000 to 1,100 rounds of 9mm a day, and then anywhere from 1,100 to 1,500 rounds of 5.56 a day, and that's what we're using. We're using CLP. That's in 1 day, not 2 days, one day.
That sounds like fun.
And you're talking like 8-week courses.
Right.
So,
well, real shooters actually shoot.
That's right.
There are some MOSs in the military that actually shoot, as opposed to the, I might be an Air Force infantry person, and I shoot 50 rounds a year in qual. Some MOSs actually get out there and put their gun to the test.
Now, I've got a friend of mine who is he's a sales rep for Frog Lube, and he would be upset with me if I did not offer you some free Frog Lube to try out and give a review to. Now, is it something you might be willing to do?
Sure, I'll try it out.
Have you ever tried it before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I'll get you a batch of it over. I'll get it over to Sid and Mona over at Spectre.
Even in the days of Don't Ask, Don't Tell being repealed, hearing you offer your lube to another man in such a way is...
Sounds so wrong.
It's not my lube. I'm just the middleman in the process.
Oh, that's even worse.
That makes it sound so much better.
Now, Larry, as we all know, shooting is a perishable skill. And even if I take a couple weeks off from shooting, I know it immediately within the first 10 rounds that I shoot. How often do you think that people should practice with their carry guns?
The biggest thing is if you don't have access to a range, you're not able to go to a range and actually shoot outside, dry fire at home. You know, of course, make sure the weapon's clear, and then dry fire. That's what we tell all the students, you know, in SF and guys on a team, dry fire. And that's what we do, spend a lot of time actually doing, going over it without ammo.
Now, just out of curiosity over there, I know the standard issue weapon for the Special Forces and everybody should be the basic M9, M9A1, whatever it is they're currently pushing out on you. Do you guys have an option for personal carried weapons, or do you have to carry what's in the system?
Pretty much you're going to carry what's in the system as far as weapons go. We have access to other weapons that the normal Army doesn't have, but you're going to carry issued weapons.
No problem. Well, I'm about to say, once you're out in the field away from the fire base, oh, whatever happens, okay. The smirk says
like,
enough.
Dude.
I was curious, you know.
Don't discuss what happens outside the wire, son.
Well, he's talking about lube. I figure we're talking all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
If you could replace that M9, what would you replace it with?
Me myself, I carry a Glock 19. That's what I like to carry.
Right. I know another guy who's done some time in Green Beret and Delta. Talks about the same gun.
That's Gary's answer to everything. Now it's Glock 19.
Now we had a SEAL in here a few months ago, and we had to ask him about his favorite SEAL movie because apparently the SEALs get all the press. And I hate to say that, thinking off the top of my head, we've got John Wayne's.
That's the last one I can think of.
Ever so accurate portrayal of the Green Berets back in the day. Is there a Green Beret movie that sticks out in your head? Well, we got Rambo also. I didn't say it was good. I just said so. Give us your favorite Green Beret movie.
I would say, as far as old school movies go, Extreme Prejudice.
Yeah.
Ooh, Nick Nolte and Powers Booth.
Yeah.
Wow.
God, you are a movie trivia.
And I did
freak,
not touch
man.
My IMDb in the least. Okay.
I know what you're up to when you're supposed to be on surveillance.
No, actually,
golly, man.
No. In all honesty, when they sent me to at one point, I had to go to El Paso for a while, and there's a restaurant out in the middle of nowhere in El Paso. That
is this like the bar in Austin?
No, there's a big sign on the wall that says that this location is where they filmed Extreme Prejudice. They filmed, what was the movie with Meg Ryan and Denzel Washington? Courage Under Fire.
There you go.
Courage Under Fire. They film a lot of desert movies out here on this actual restaurant's area. The restaurant was built as a catering station for movies they film out there. And after being there and seeing all the stuff that was there, I went back and rewatched it after having seen it as a kid. But, yes, that's a good movie. And I think even David Carradine might be in that one.
Now, Larry, I'll ask you this, but if you don't want to answer, totally fine. I was reading in the news today that reports are saying that U.S. soldiers and British Royal Marines have been urged to show courageous restraint by not shooting Taliban members spotted planting IEDs at night.
At night.
So as not to disturb the locals. Does that...
the smirk.
Once again, we won't talk about what happens outside the wire, but...
I mean, it made me really... I was screaming in my vacant house. I mean, it just drove me insane to read that. Is this an accurate portrayal, or... is this just PC?
Who knows what's going on? You know, there might be a current situation where an incident happened and it's command directive where they want to, you know, quote something in the area and then that came out as news. So there's no telling.
All right. Good. Hopefully it's not. Yeah. Hopefully it's not true.
One would hope. But somehow with our current administration, that would not surprise me.
Courageous restraint. The terminology. We can't say, well, we don't want to disturb the beauty sleep of the guys trying to kill you, but... courageous restraint.
No.
Now, Larry, what do you carry as your personal, when you're carrying your gun in public, duty rounds? Or not duty rounds, I'm sorry, duty rounds would be for you, Jason.
Yes.
But your concealed carry
preferred
rounds,
preferred self-defense
rounds.
Really, I'm a full metal
Actually,
jacket guy.
Hold on,
really?
We'll get right back to that in just a minute. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking to Larry Ryland, current Green Beret in the United States Army, asking him about his training course that he's putting together with our buddies over at Spectre Firearms. It's going to be December 1st and December 7th, right, Larry?
Roger.
All right. And tell us real quick, give us a recap of the course and what people should expect.
Spectre Firearms is going to be sponsoring the course out of Spring, Texas. It's off of Spring Cypress Road. What you're looking at, we're going to do a Carbine 1 the first weekend and then Carbine 2 the second weekend. We're going to be basic flat range. Transition drills, multiple targets, multiple rounds on target.
All right. And round count for the weekend?
Round count's going to be 400 rounds of pistol and 1,000 rounds of rifle ammo for each weekend.
All right. Now, right before we went to break, we were asking you, what is your carry ammunition? What do you keep in the guns that you carry on you when you're out in public, when you're not in uniform?
Really, I really like full metal jacket ammo. You know, lots of guys like hollow points and so forth. I really like military type issue ammo. You never know if somebody's going to duck behind cover or something like that, and you need to get through. And you know, lots of people bitch about 9mm. Really, as long as you're shooting in the face, it doesn't matter.
Oh man, I like Larry.
I agree with him 100%. But do you want to go before the grand jury?
So.
Hey, you know what?
I was meaning to shoot him in the face.
There's a part of the Texas Penal Code, Chapter 9, which specifically says necessity. Your Honor, he needed killing.
Yep. Okay. And once you're at deadly force, how you apply that deadly force doesn't matter. I understand.
All right. If you have questions or comments for Larry, give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Let's head out to Bryan, Texas, and talk to Johnny. Johnny, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say?
Hey, guys. Y'all got a great show. I accidentally found y'all. I work in the oil field, and I had to go out to a well one evening, and I just was scanning through the radio and found y'all. And hats off to the your gentleman there that's a Green Beret. I'm an old Vietnam vet. And what do you guys think of the FN57x28?
Well, first off, Johnny, one, we appreciate you finding our show and giving us a call. And two, we appreciate your service. Thank you for what you've done for our country.
Thank you.
All right, and I'll throw this at the guys.
I can't get excited.
It's an answer in search of a question.
Yeah, now there's the ammunition that we as civilians can get our hands on, or that we can reload if we're really sharp, and then there's the stuff that the military and police can get. But in either case, personally, I'm looking at it as kind of, you know, yeah, like you said, an answer in search of a question.
If you look at what it was designed for, it was designed to penetrate Soviet pack soft body armor, mm-hmm. and it was going to be something they could issue to rear echelon troops that was bigger than a pistol, smaller than a rifle, that could defeat soft body armor. But for general usage and general everyday carry, there's so much more cost-effective solutions out there, I think. I don't have a problem with anybody that wants to own one. We're not saying, oh, that's something that civilians shouldn't have. But I think there's a lot better cost-effective solutions out there than this particular round. If you want to have it for fun, that's great. I think it would be a great prairie dog rabbit round. But for anti-personnel, I think it's an ice pick that when you get into small calibers, until you get up above about 2,500 feet per second, that mm-hmm. small caliber is exactly that. It's an ice pick. It's not doing the velocity is what causes the damage in the small caliber weapons like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, mainly what I bought it for was I do a lot of hog hunting, and I use it as my backup.
Man, so. I think you might piss off a hog because, again, you've got that magic velocity. I think out of a pistol, a 5.7 is only going to be coming out of there about 1,800, 1,900 feet per second, which still it's a 22 at, you know, 1,800 feet per second maybe. But even in your M4s, your short-barreled M4s, you're still getting out there 2,500 feet per second. So there's that magic velocity that where you start getting the hydrostatic shock damage that I don't think you're going to cross that threshold with that round out of that gun.
Yeah. I can only speak of one incident where I know that round was used to stop something or someone. And the agency stacked a lot of those rounds. I mean, literally this guy was kind of up in an attic. Mm-hmm. And rounds went in, I guess, on an upward angle towards the head, and you know this guy's laying on a table and just kind of he died of a lead overdose. True enough,
yeah. There's a lot of agencies out there that were in love with it about 10 years ago, and then it's just fallen out of favor. Like once they actually got into actual shootings where they had to put rounds into people, they were not happy with the ballistic results of the. The round, so it kind of went away. And if you drop one of the loaded rifle magazines that has the little rotator thing in there, that doesn't work out well for the magazine or the rounds that go shooting across the room.
So, yeah, the pistol doesn't work well in that regard either.
So, but it's a fun gun. I hate to bring it. It's a horrible thing to bring up, but Major Nadal Hassan, worthless guy that he is, used it. But he shot like 40 people, and I think he killed 19. 13. Okay, so and that is a horrible thing to have to look at, but ballistically, it didn't really.
Well, and the thing is that even in those incidents, it wasn't purely the ballistics that killed him. It was the fact that they had to wait for
blood loss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand. Hey, guys, I appreciate it. And I love your show. Y'all are fantastic and everything. And just keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Johnny. We appreciate you calling. And thanks again for your service.
One more thing to tell y'all that I've got a CHL, and this past renewal, I had to show my 521, and I got my renewal for half price.
Good deal.
That's right. Added benefit to being a veteran.
There you go. Hey, guys, take care, man.
Thank you, sir. Johnny.
Thank you much.
All right.
Now, Larry, just like we were talking about here with Nadal Hassan using the 5.7, one of the reasons that he was successful in shooting as many soldiers as he did was the lack of an armed presence on base. Yeah, as we know, as we heard, it was actually, what was it, school ISD?
It was local PD were out, like, working traffic that particular day. And I think both those officers have since been laid off, amazingly.
Do you feel like being soldiers who fight for a living, you should be able to carry your guns on base?
Definitely. As long as someone's properly trained, licensed, has a proper background check, I think they should be able to carry legally anywhere in the country.
No argument there.
Yeah. I personally feel that it is an absolutely asinine rule that we ask you guys to go fight for our country overseas and in awful environments, and then you come home, and the place that you should be protected, your fort, the place that nobody should be able to get you at, you can't even carry your own gun. I find it ridiculous, and I think that's one of the first things that needs to be repealed as soon as we get a new administration in office.
Well, you know, that's not even just this administration. That is something that started taking place.
Under Clinton.
Actually, you can go back even further than that. My cousin was career Marine Corps and was a provost marshal at a number of different bases, and that was a rule for him all the way back through the 1970s, unfortunately. That is a change in the mindset of your officers' corps.
But even your MPs go on duty, they get issued a weapon, and then when they go off duty, they give the weapon back. Whereas Houston Police, Harris County, any local PD,
right,
when you're off the clock, you're still armed 24/7.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that they take away the MP's gun seems a little confusing.
Goofy
to me.
Yes.
Yeah, if he's qualified to carry it for 8 hours during the day, why isn't he qualified to carry it for the other 16?
You know? Wholeheartedly agree. Now, Larry, what kind of ammo do you like to run in your rifles?
I normally stick with, like I said, military-issue ammo is really what I like. As far as, you know, purchasing it now, you can get Green Tip online, several different distributors, and it's well worth it.
Yes, Jeff knows.
But you shot a bunch of pigs with that, and it didn't work out so well. Was it a short barrel or something?
No. I was using a 14.5-inch barrel at the time, and it did not work out well at all. It zipped right through them. There were some of the bigger ones, I shot probably 12 and 13 times. And
it was a penetrator as advertised. It penetrated right through them.
They never even slowed down. And I know I was hitting because I saw the puff of smoke come out of the back and the puff of smoke come out of the chest. And they never even slowed down. Just zipped, darted, yeah, kept going.
That's the beauty of a 308, dude.
The pilot was laughing the whole time because all he could hear was cussing coming from the back seat of the helicopter that we were packed into. So it was a lot of fun, but definitely a good learning experience. Mm-hmm. So I take it the Green Tip works a little bit better on people than it does pigs.
Well, it's all about shot placement. Like I said, you go mean early. You know, if someone pretty vigilant and aggressive, uh-huh, and you shoot somebody in the face, you're pretty much done. They don't want to fight anymore. So
yeah, that's just reset the clock. See where that might work.
So what do you say to the people that think that if they're going to carry a gun, they're just and they have to use their gun, they're just going to shoot somebody in the leg?
You know, if you're carrying a gun in the first place, it's because you obviously think something might happen. You're aware of a situation that could happen. And if you actually got to use deadly force, or you're engaged in somebody actually trying to harm you or your family, then, you know, what are you going to do? I'm going to stop the deadly force that's going to harm myself or my family. So I'm going to do what I have to. It's not going to be, I'm going to shoot the guy in the leg. I'm going to stop shooting once aggression towards me stops.
Do you have a plan with your family on what to do just in case, you know, to get the tactical advantage, just in case something happens, say, in your house? You know, we've got it's called the mother-in-law drill that we do with our buddy John Farnham, who he's got a class coming up next weekend. If anybody wants info, they can get me at jeff@gunsovertexasradio.com. It's the mother-in-law drill is a hostage drill, and this is something that you plan ahead with your wife or your husband, somebody in advance. If they're being held hostage, you ask that guy a question. What do you want? Give them a second and a half. The wife or the husband falls to the ground while you place the shot, hopefully in the face. So is that something that you plan ahead with your wife?
Yeah, pretty much. We have a, you know, basic alarm system. Then just have her dialed in, situationally aware, pulling up, open the garage door, coming into the garage, and shutting the garage door before she actually enters the house, knowing the alarm system's on, and then basically how to maneuver through the house.
30 seconds. All right. Now, if you wanted to find out about, if you wanted to find out more about Larry Ryland's course that he's putting on with Spectre Firearms, you can go to www.spectrefirearms.com and inquire about that course. We give it 2 thumbs up here at Guns Over Texas. Thanks for listening, Houston. We'll see you at the same time next week. Shoot straight.